The Atlanta Botanical Garden is now in its fourth decade, I think, at Piedmont Park, at the edge of Piedmont Park.
The edge of Piedmont Park, yeah.
And how many visitors annually now?
Last year, we were at 523,000, so we have hit the half million mark and still growing.
Do you keep track of how many folks are from out of state?
We do. We keep track of, through zip codes, we try to keep track of every visitor. And I think we're still at about 30% of our visitors are from out of state. You know, Atlanta is, and people come through here from all over the world. You can come to the garden any day and listen to the different languages that are spoken. And I think people come to see family. They're coming, obviously, because we have the largest airport in the world. It's a great city. And many countries have fabulous botanical gardens. So it's kind of in the DNA, particularly of Europeans, to come and visit a botanical garden.
I remember back in the 1980s, the garden was just the gardens and I think a visitor center in the early 80s. Since then, boy, it's really evolved to a lot more than just gardens. You've got the concert series.
Yes.
You've got food and beverage demonstrations, art exhibits, kids' activities. And I guess the question I have is that I wonder if the botanical garden has borrowed a page from, say, Major League Baseball. When you go to the stadium now, you're going to see a lot more than just a baseball game. You got a baseball museum. You've got a bar. You've got some restaurants. You got games for the kids. Has that become necessary to evolve into something more than just the greenery, so to speak, to attract more visitors?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are parallels. I'm not sure I would. I think that's an interesting one. I think one is we're an experience-based society, right? Everything is experience-based. In fact, the economy is experience-based. Look at Facebook, right? Interactivity. So the days when you could just be a pretty garden in a pretty place and market the daffodils and now the azaleas are in bloom and the maples are in their fall glory, that doesn't do it anymore. We compete against baseball. We compete against shopping at the mall. Actually, what we're all competing against is leisure time. So the thing we've discovered and know well, you can consider your own life and know this is probably true. We're all too busy. And some studies say that we have 2 free days a month to do something of leisure activity. So that doesn't give us a lot. So we have to be competitive and dynamic and creative. But to me, the other part of the garden story is that there are so many dimensions to a botanical garden and to this botanical garden in particular. It is an incredible canvas on which you can paint music, you can paint art, you can paint creative activities with children. We can collaborate with our local creative performing arts groups like the ballet and the opera who've come and performed at the garden, the Alliance Theater. What a wonderful setting to have that kind of interactivity. And the other part of our story is that I didn't want to market just to the garden audience anymore. That's like preaching to the choir, isn't it? They already love a garden. If you're a home gardener and you love gardens and you visit gardens wherever you go, it's not going to be hard to attract you. And we love our garden audience. They're core to our organization. But we needed to go beyond that in order to not only survive financially. And, you know, part of our metrics are how many people come, how many members, who participates in programs. But if you look at the mission side, if people don't come to the garden, how can we possibly connect them to the environment and to nature and to plants and why they're relevant in their lives? And they are relevant on every level from the minute you get up in the morning and eat your breakfast to have a cup of coffee, which comes, by the way, from a coffee plant, on every level. But we're so disconnected from nature. So how do we connect our mission? We have to do it by getting people into the garden. And we've done that in many, many creative ways that you just mentioned.
Is there another botanical garden in the world somewhere from which you draw your inspiration?
There are many. I could tell you personally one of my favorites that I would say we took inspiration from for our new woodland garden that we're building right now that'll open next spring is a garden little known. It's called Blodell Reserve, and it's on Bainbridge Island in Washington State. And it's just a beautiful experience. Of course, you know, Washington State has an amazing amount of rain, so they have beautiful forests and woodlands and water. And this garden is taking advantage of those natural features. You walk through the woods. You walk along a pond. It's very serene, very Walden's Pond, just beautiful. And you come to a glade or you come to a beautifully designed Asian garden that opens up as like this incredible miracle in the middle of the woodland that you're not expecting. So they present the unexpected and the more formal gardens within a natural setting in a way that's just really elegant and beautiful and respectful of the natural environment. And that we took that as inspiration for our new woodland garden, I think Chicago Botanic Garden comes to mind when we talk about our edible garden. They developed one of the first vegetable and fruit and herb gardens at a botanical garden in the country and did some remarkable programming. They've probably been doing that for 15 to 20 years. So they were a leader in that regard. So we're always looking at good models and taking inspiration from what others do and then doing it our way, which is unique to Atlanta and to this region.
And now you've kicked off your next capital campaign, which is one of the larger ones you've had.
Yes.
Maybe the second largest ever, I think.
Good, yeah, second. So. The last one was $60 million, and this one is $40 million.
And there are plans to build a restaurant.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. And but that's a departure, is it not?
Well, it isn't a departure when you think we have 523,000 visitors, and most people come hungry, right?
But it's not going to be a snack bar, though.
It's not going to be a snack bar, although we do want to cater to those who come. Like, a lot of people come to our children's garden, which, by the way, gets a facelift later next year, and we'll open a brand new experience-based children's garden in 2016. But, you know, you come with the kids, they parents, grandparents, nannies, want to have a great experience with their children. And, you know, kids, every hour and a half, they need something to eat. So we will cater to that. But going back to the restaurant, it's going to be a beautiful, understated, elegant restaurant that sits next to Garden House in our in the center of the garden. But very transparent. So you're getting views into the garden, views of the city. But I'm most excited about our new partnership. So we've just announced a partnership with Linton Hopkins. And, you know,
really?
Linton, yes, and he's a James Beard award-winning chef for the Southeast in 2012. He's a leader in this community, clearly, started the Peachtree Farmers Market and is doing breads for many restaurants in our community. But more importantly, I think Linton's view of food is that food is about community. And buying local and fresh is really critical, and living up to that as a real brand. So I just felt like when we did this restaurant, it would be so important that the food be as good as the experience in the garden, and that the food be as elegant as our beautiful plant collections, and the food be as exciting as the art exhibits we do. And Linton can deliver that. So he and his team are working with us right now, and they will actually run the cafe, which will be the cafe at Linton's, starting November 15th when we open our holiday light exhibit. And then we'll build the restaurant next year and open it late in 2015. But we'll be branding to Linton and serving his food in a matter of weeks.
Will customers to the restaurant need to buy a ticket to the botanical garden to get the restaurant, or will it be independent from the garden?
No, it will not be independent from the garden because, like I said, our focus is our mission and our focus is on the visitors who come to enjoy the garden. But that said, we already have 28,000 member households. And if you have 2 to 2.5 to 3 people per household, that's somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 to 90,000 people who are already members. We expect that to grow. People will buy a $100 membership to enjoy the garden all year long, but also to eat at Linton's in the garden. And then, of course, we want to cater to our visitors. And we'll do many special events and programs. We'll offer guest tickets to our members so they can bring a guest and enjoy Linton's in the garden at the same time. But it won't be open to the general public who doesn't want to enjoy the garden. That's just not part of the experience we want.
Some other highlights from the Capital campaign. What are we looking forward to?
Well, the beautiful Woodland Gardens of Storza will open next spring with an exciting exhibit that we'll tell you about later. We'll tantalize you with that idea. And a beautiful new garden, the Skyline Gardens, which are on the left side of the garden on the east side of the campus. And they're called the Skyline Gardens because really the best view of the city. So while the Woodland Gardens are old European romantic design, the Skyline Gardens are going to be urban chic contemporary design using Corten steel and beautiful bluestone. And there are 3 components that I'm most excited about. One is we're going to do a flower walk. We have beautiful gardens at the Atlanta Botanical Garden, but we've never been able to just let ourselves loose and do a garden that's just about beauty and flowers, and that's what this will be. And then we're going to move our cactus and succulent garden into the terraces as a part of the Skyline Garden and expand that beautiful garden. And I love it because it's kind of an oxymoron to have cactus and succulent dry landscape plants in the Southeast. But if you have a good sandy soil and lots of sunshine, you can grow them. And, of course, they're extremely drought tolerant, and they're just beautiful of form and color and desert wildflowers will be a part of that. And the third is our wonderful native bog garden. So the juxtaposition of dry plants and wetland plants, I think, is really interesting. And for us, a great way to teach people that plants are habitat-based, and they are adapted to their habitats. And our beautiful bog garden is really an interesting place because it's the center of our Sarracenia, which is called, is the Latin name for carnivorous plants, pitcher plants, that eat bugs. And so they're really interesting to people, but mostly to kids, because you can dissect them and see all the skeletons of the bugs after the plants have digested all the proteins and the nutrients from the bug.
I think a lot of folks would be surprised to learn that the Atlanta Botanical Garden undertakes some plant research. You actually have a scientific community that's involved there. Any plans to expand that?
Yes, absolutely. As part of the campaign, in fact, we're going to expand the Center for Conservation and Training. So our conservation work focuses on rare and endangered species in the Southeast, many of which are these bog plants I was talking about, but also orchids. We have the largest orchid collection in the United States, and we're doing work to preserve the rare species, the rare orchids, in the Southeast, all the way down to Florida, working in the Fakahatchee Strand to bring back the cigar orchids that have all but disappeared down there for many reasons. We're also working, interestingly enough, for Botanical Garden, we're working with amphibians, preserving frogs from both Latin America, but also here in Georgia, where the gopher frog has been disappearing along with the gopher tortoise. And the training center I just want to talk briefly about is so important, because many students are going into molecular biology and moving into medicines and biotech, which is great. But we need field naturalists, we need botanists, we need taxonomists, we need people who understand plants and animals and the living systems in which they are so that we can continue to preserve them. Because you know we're losing biodiversity at an alarming rate, and the conservation work that we do at the garden is so critical to saving these plants and animals.
Is there a goal to acquire more land where you are, adjacent to Piedmont Park?
No, don't start any rumors.
I'm just asking.
I'm teasing. No. We love our campus. The garden in Atlanta is in, I just think, one of the most magnificent parts of the city next to Piedmont Park. Piedmont Park Conservancy is a great neighbor and a great partner to us, and we're so proud of the great work that they've done for our community in preserving our crown jewel. I say the garden is the gateway to the environment in Atlanta, and it's also the green epicenter because you have the botanical garden on one level, then you have Piedmont Park, our crown jewel, on another level, and then you have the Beltline, which is like the biggest urban renewal project in the country, at the third level, and they all come together in our neck of the woods, which is fantastic. We have plenty to do on our 30-acre campus, but we are limited with plant collections, research, growth in terms of programs. And we're fortunate that a lovely, wonderful, generous family in Gainesville donated, 187 acres to us in 2001. That's Charles and Leslie Smith Gall. And we're getting ready to open that new garden next spring. So
sort of another branch of ABG.
I love that.
Pardon the pun. Yeah,
that's
okay.
Great. We'll take that pun. It is a branch of the garden and a beautiful branch. And we're already growing plant collections, and we'll open the new garden next spring.
Well, I know that conservation is a key component of the garden's mission. But what about sustainability? Is it feasible for the garden to become totally sustainable? I know you've got a large underground water cistern that you use. But what about plans to maybe generate your own power to become totally sustainable? Is that feasible or is that unrealistic?
It's not realistic with where we are. I can tell you Longwood Garden up in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, which has hundreds of acres, large, probably thousands actually, which is Pierre DuPont's garden that he started in the late 1800s. They have, I think, 10 acres of solar panels that they're using to offset their energy needs. But of course, solar takes space, and we don't have the kind of space to do that. But we do believe in sustainability. And I think on some level, we can showcase to people in our community what you can do on a smaller scale that still is meaningful. So what do I mean by that? Our visitor center has 3 green roofs. And I think if we're building new buildings in Atlanta, we should be doing more with green roofs because obviously they slow down rainwater, stormwater runoff. They create new habitat. They save energy for buildings from you know, heat loss and air conditioning, and they're beautiful. And obviously, they're places for pollinators. We never talk about pollinators, but, you know, butterflies are disappearing in our country. And so every little garden that you can create, whether it's a rooftop or your own garden, that supports a pollinator from a honeybee to a butterfly, you're really making a difference. And I think that is also about sustainability. As you mentioned, we have about 100,000-gallon cistern under our road. So most of our stormwater drains to that, and we use it for watering our plants. The other thing we do that is about sustainability is, you know, some gardens and some gardeners are probably big polluters. I hate to say it, but we pour pesticides and fertilizers on our lawn, and sometimes we waste water on our lawns. But rose gardens can be the worst offenders because you put pesticides and fungicides. So we converted our rose garden numerous years ago to an organic rose garden. And you have to select different species, but isn't that what it's all about? Let's grow the best plants for our community that don't require pollutants, both for pollinators, right? If you use pesticides, you're impacting the butterflies and the caterpillars. So select the right plants so we can reduce what we're doing and the impacts we're having on the environment. So I look at sustainability as beyond just the energy question. But just going back to energy, since we're getting ready to open our Garden Lights exhibition on November 15th, when we decided to do a lights exhibition, we as an organization spent a lot of time talking about how do you do that without looking as though you're just freely using energy in a way that's not sustainable. And we made a commitment to sustainability. So the light show, which is almost 1.5 million lights, is predominantly probably 98% LED lights. They use 80% less energy than incandescent or regular lights. They're beautiful. And we buy our power from Georgia Power. It's green energy. So it's wind and solar and biofuel energy. And we run that entire light show with the same amount of power as two homes every single night. So there you can showcase a way to significantly reduce your energy needs just by changing your light bulbs. So I think there are a lot of smaller scale but realistic things that we do at the garden that are about sustainability, from the plants to energy to water, and including recycling. We recycle everything, which is really important.
Best source for information for folks who'd like to find out what's going on?
AtlantaBotanicalGarden.org, of course, our website. All the information you could ask for is on that, including content. So if you want to know about the conservation of frogs, you can listen to our frog blog. We tape that or read it. Or about orchids, Becky Brinkman, our orchid specialist, has an incredible blog that's really fascinating. Opens your eyes to the beauty and the ecology of orchids and how important they are to pollinators around the world.
Mary Pat Matheson is president and CEO of the Atlanta Botanical Garden. Ms. Matheson, it's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. It's been great to be here. Thanks.